Welcome to the Free to Lead podcast, journeys of leaders, driven by passion, inspired by purpose. My name is Will Steele. I'm the host of the show. I'm a transformational business and leadership coach. I say transform the business owner, you transform the business. So if you want to be the fullest version of yourself in the world, decisive, taking clear action, moving forward, producing the kind of results and having the kind of impact you really want to have in your business, in your life, and in the world, then stay tuned. The people on this show that we interview are handpicked. They've got pearls of wisdom. They're going to share their breakdowns, breakthroughs, their challenges, what they've dealt with, how they've grown, and how they've become free to lead. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, I'd love to hear from you, and I'll be telling you how you can get in contact in about 20 minutes' time. Right now, let's dive into today's episode. Welcome to today's episode of Free to Lead, journeys of leaders driven by passion, inspired by purpose. Today on the show, I have Emma Powell. She retired early on passive real estate investments, and she went from being a stay-at-home mom with six kids to a multimillionaire in less than 5 years. And then in 2022, she retired. Her husband, he's retired early on real estate investing. And now she's partnered on almost a thousand apartment units and sponsors a free commercial investing club to help other investors expand their portfolios. So she's a co-founder and president of Rise Capital Investments, a boutique private debt and equity fund. So without further ado, Emma, welcome to Free to Lead.
Yeah, excited to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, what you've created is a lot of people's dreams, right? To be able to retire, they've got passive income, and now you're creating a business.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit about the backstory. It sounds really interesting. You had six kids, and what happened?
Yeah, I love how you, when you say it all in a soundbite like that, it makes it sound like really impressive. But when you're living it day to day, it's every day is a little different. And just these tiny baby steps every day, making it towards the progress. And sometimes you just have to turn around and look and say, okay, wow, look what we've done over the past, I guess it's been about seven or eight years that we've been working on this. So basically end of 2017, my husband was laid off from his IT job, and we were not expecting to get laid off. One of our best friends was the founder of the company. And when he announced he was leaving, they basically just laid off a bunch of people. They hadn't gotten a round of funding they needed, and they laid off quite a bit of the workforce. And it was a shock, and it was a panic attack. Like, we were immediately going to the networking events, updating the resume all over LinkedIn. Like, I was doing it too. I was a photographer at the time. I did real estate photography during the week, and then I did weddings on the weekends. And I had six kids that were homeschooled. And so I was just working part-time. And I just realized that if I went full-time in photography, I would struggle to even make what he was making. Yeah. And I just realized that was just not a career. It was more than a hobby job, but it definitely was not something that I wanted to scale into a career. I had just graduated from college like a couple of months before that. I went back and finished late, had a business degree, and I thought, I really need an opportunity to remake my career here so that if he gets laid off, because in IT, it's not a question of if, it's when and how often. And so I knew that this was just going to keep happening again and again, and I needed to be more prepared for it. And I was just lying in bed one night, and I was thinking about this letter, that a recommendation letter that one of the executives at the company had written for him. She just felt so bad that he got laid off. Everybody was shocked. He was like employee number 9 or something. And she wrote a letter. It was almost like a charity letter. Part of it was like, yeah, he's great at IT and all that. But then he said he's a sole income provider for six kids. And I was like, how did I let that happen? How did I let him take that on? And I just was falling asleep one night thinking about this letter. And I turned to him and I said, honey, I am never going to let this happen to us again. And I didn't know what I was going to do or how I was going to handle it. But I just knew that it was my fault, but that it was my responsibility to step up, especially since we were done having kids. And our youngest, I think at that time, was like almost in kindergarten. And so I felt like it's time for me to really get serious about making some income And if I'm going to spend time away from the kids, I better do a better job of maximizing it. I had learned that lesson already in the photography because I was doing like super cheap, affordable stuff when I first started out and had been raising my prices, realizing that these strangers do not deserve cheap photography. Like my children deserve me to not be editing photos or out of the house at shoots all the time. And so I had already been prioritizing my kids over the business and charging more what I was worth. And I thought, okay, I really got to level that philosophy up to be able to make more money. So anyway, we got a new job. We moved across the country. It was this whirlwind experience. And when we got there, I had no more photography business. And I said, this is really a chance for me to tear everything down to the ground and start over, be more intentional about choosing what I was going to do. And I genuinely like real estate. I was obviously a real estate photographer for almost 10 years. And I thought to myself, like, I'm going to buy a couple of rental houses. I was a Dave Ramsey fan and he was like, pay cash for your rentals. And we had sold our house in Texas. We had remodeled it completely and made a lot of money from that process. And I thought we're going to take all the profit from that and put some on a down payment on our new house. And then we're going to take the rest and pay cash for a rental house. And then I found two that I really liked. And I thought, what if I just got 50% mortgages? And I was like, oh, Dave Ramsey would be so mad at me if I called a show and I said this. But then I just realized I'm not a debt addict and I don't need to completely be 100% debt-free, that I could use it strategically and carefully. And then that was the kind of the moment that I realized, like, wow, there's a whole different world out here of investing in real estate, investing that I had no idea. Like one rental house was not going to change our lives. But if I paid cash for it, I'd only have one for how long would it take us to get another one? And so I immediately from there levered up to, why don't I just buy apartments and put a down payment on this apartment? What if I don't have enough money? What if I get some friends and family together and we put some money in and we go buy an apartment building together? So the dream quickly exploded from there. And I connected with our local real estate clubs and just started attending religiously, listening to what everybody said. They all have a different philosophy. They all have a different way of, this is rentals, this is short-term rentals, this is loans, this is apartments, this is self-storage. Everybody has a different way of doing it, but really dialing into something that I felt like spoke to me, that I was excited about, that I wanted to do. And so I tried to buy my first apartment building, couldn't do it, couldn't get a loan on it. The bank was like, you don't know what you're doing, right? And I scaled back thinking I'm going to flip a couple houses. If you have enough money and the bank will loan you money. So I'm going to go make some more money by flipping. But I ended up just keeping them all as rentals and ran out of money. And I'm like, that apartment building's even farther off now. And that was when I decided, like, I'm just going to go raise the money from other people, get really serious about that and build a business around it. So that's really what happened in the first 2 years of investing, started buying apartment buildings and just putting groups of people together. And I wasn't that good at it. I'm still not that great at raising capital. It's very challenging to get enough trust from people that they're going to put five or six figures in with you on an investment. And every deal, it's like a new group of people, right? So that was really stressful, and finding a deal and then running the deal. And then I realized I just need to specialize in raising money. There are plenty of people out there who can find deals and manage deals better than I can. I'm trying to retire and it's not a good look to say, hey, you should invest with me because I want to retire early. You should invest with somebody because they're really excited about running that business for a number of years. And that just wasn't me. But I knew a lot of people at that time who could run businesses better than I could. I said, I'm just going to dial back. My business is going to be all about raising capital, putting people together and finding great operators and introducing them to people and investing our own money in those same deals. And so over time, that narrowing focus on just raising capital helped me to create a more part-time business and a more remote business so that we could travel full-time, which is what was really important to us. And so that was a lot packed into that story. That whole process took about 5 years before we were like, okay, we're unplugging, we're going to go travel full-time, and we don't need the money from the business anymore. Now we can just live on the passive income from the rentals and the loans and be able to go out and do what we want. And what we wanted to do was help other families figure out how to do the same thing.
Got it. And that's now your business, is it? That's the business that you're...
Yeah. We raise capital for private loans mostly because when we were getting ready to retire, we had a lot of equity in houses and apartment buildings and we had no cash flow because I was reinvesting everything back into the business because my husband had a good W-2. And so I didn't need any of the money from the business. And so the way I was investing it was, I don't need the cash flow. I need long-term growth. I need long-term reliable growth. And then about a year, maybe 2 years before I was like, we have enough net worth to retire, but we do not have enough cash flow to retire. I completely changed my outlook because I need to start drawing money off the business, and there's no money to draw off of it because we always pay our investors first. It's mostly equity, and that's a really tough position. And imagine that you're living in a house in California and you have even $1 million of equity in that house. You can't take that to the grocery store. Nobody's going to let you buy anything with that equity. You have to liquidate it somehow, whether selling it, refinance. There are different ways to do it. But to be able to say, hey, I've got a multi-million dollar net worth and we can't quit our jobs. Like, we can't do what we want to do. So we switched over to more lending money. It doesn't have as good of tax benefits, but we kept enough apartments to keep the taxes at bay and then focused more of our new investments on lending so that we could have some reliable cash flow. And what we've found is as we've been selling buildings little by little, we're able to actually not spend the money from the loans. We're able to take a little bit of money from that equity, use that for living expenses, investing 90% of it back into other things, mostly private lending at this point. And we thought that we were going to be living on that cash flow. But as it turns out, it's going to be another couple of years before we have to draw off of that, which is nice because now it gets to compound. And compounding is really where it starts to make a huge difference in your lifestyle. It's like piling up a lot faster.
Good. So it sounds like the plan, it has worked. It's worked and still fulfilling itself. So what's your biggest challenge now with the, so you've got this business where you're loaning and raising funds for people, right? As far as I can tell. So what's the biggest challenge you're facing at the moment?
Okay. So the two biggest ones, business related, and one's kind of more of our personal finance related. So business related, I feel like it's just really slow to make money, to raise money. The relationships that we have with our investors, it's built little by little. There, like I said, there's a lot of trust before you're going to put five or six figures in. Most private funds, the minimum is 50,000 to maybe 250,000 is pretty typical. And so you're seeing maybe 25 occasionally, but mostly 50,000 is pretty average. And so if I'm going to write a $50,000 check to somebody, like I personally have to go through a process of vetting them out and watching them over the course of a couple of months to up to maybe a couple of years, depending on how experienced they are. And so that relationship, or we're going to call it a sales cycle because entrepreneurial terms, when you first meet somebody before they invest, the average is about 18 months. And so you don't just say, I'm going to start this business raising capital, lending money. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, how much, what kind of check can I write you? And so raising money is very slow, which means that the business itself takes a long time because you have the same fixed expenses every month. But you only make money if you're originating loans, right? And so I feel like those fixed expenses versus the rate of originating loans, we make money off of servicing the loans as well, not just the origination fees. But just to keep the whole thing running, it's just a slow start. And we knew that going in, which is why I chose other partners who had already retired on their own passive income, that they didn't need the money coming in for a good two to three years before you start to feel like, why am I doing this? Right? Like at a certain point, if you are helping other people and you have this passion to help other people, but it's in a business format rather than a nonprofit format, the business needs to make money. And so if you just want to help people and it doesn't matter how much money it makes, it should be a nonprofit. And so my partners have a nonprofit that we volunteer for. And so that is a part of what we do. Philanthropy is very important. But at the same time, the business has to be a business and justify its existence. And so at a certain point, it does need to make money. But to build it foundationally, where you have the time to wait for these long tail events and these sell cycles and the trust that you need to build up with enough investors that you can actually do something big with a pile of cash, to be able to afford and withstand that, it takes a couple of years of being able to not make money. And it takes a couple of years of emotionally, mentally saying, I don't need to make money from this business. So that has been a challenge. Just, we knew it would take a long time, but then when you actually get into it, it's all, oh, this is taking a long time.
Yeah. Because you still got things going out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's nice that we don't have bills we need to pay that we're worried about. Like the rental income and all of that is covering everything, but the income is extremely irregular. And so I feel like there are some months that are scary months because you're like, oh man, that house that was supposed to sell, the contract fell through or something. And so then you're faced with another month or couple months of uncertainty. Now, if you have enough deals stacked up in volume, something's always moving. There's a velocity there. But the bigger the deals get, the less velocity there is. So you have bigger payouts, but then bigger desert stretches in between payouts. So the irregular income is very challenging And so looking at it from that perspective, it's yes, you can pay your bills. Yes, everything's going to be fine. But at the same time, it's like you're not always sitting on a pile of cash because we have investors, we tend to overinvest. We see something there, there's a deal that needs funded. We had an investor fallout at the last minute, and we're all scrambling to put in our personal money to make the thing happen. And I'm like, oh man, I did it again. I put in too much money again. And so those kinds of things, that just cash flow management is a massive challenge.
And then what's the worst thing about it?
The stress, and I don't know if that would be the same case for everybody. I feel like when we very first got married, and my husband was like, hey, who's going to do the bills? Which one of us is going to handle just writing the checks, setting all this up, making sure that we have money? And I'm like, I'll do it, right? And the very first time, I think I lasted like 10 minutes, and I'm like crying and yelling and power. I just didn't realize how little money we made and what on earth were we thinking running this apartment? And I just couldn't handle the stress of things that needed to be paid for that I didn't know how we were going to pay for. And that's one of the reasons that running apartments to me is so stressful, because it's like your parking lot went out, you've lost more than multiple roofs on multiple buildings, and you need to replace them all in the same month. Like those kinds of things happening where I'm like, how are we going to pay for this? Do the owners have to put in money? Are we able to get net 60 or net 90 terms with the vendor? Like just sorting all of that out. And some people love that chase. Some people love having that puzzle that they solve. And then they're like, oh, we got net 30 from this guy. And then we were able to have this and to put this off for another month. And like that kind of juggling, some people love it. But for me, it's extremely stressful. And it was one of the reasons I don't love being the direct first level manager on properties, because I just go to freak out mode the minute something needs paid for. And I got to get creative about how that's going to work. So yeah, for me, the stress of how are we going to pay for this? And so in personal finances, that's all that commercial building, the contract fell through, and it takes months to sell a commercial building. And so what are we going to do for the next 90 days when we were planning on that? And now we got to stretch the income. And my husband's much more chill and calm and even about that. And he's, no, figure it out. And he'll be more like, we'll just get a 0% credit card, and then we pay it off when that comes in. I hate doing that. And he hates doing it too, but it's just one of those things where if we have to do it, I'm the one who's freaking out about it. And he's the one who's, you know what? This is what we're doing for the next 90 days. And he's just more emotionally able to kind of stay
Well,
calm
yeah,
about.
that's where I would go to look. So there's a charge definitely around, and you said it's stressful, but it's just what it is. It's
Yes,
stress
I'm
more.
stressed.
Exactly. So when you think about having to pay the money, or think about how we're going to pay the money, or you think about having debt, just play for a moment. What does that remind you of growing up? That kind of feeling. Whatever pops into your head.
Yeah, there's just always, I'm from a very big family, and there's just always been a scarcity mindset around money. And my dad and my mom were college educated. My dad was a white collar worker, very good at what he did. And I always really felt like there should be more than there was. But
Wait. So you remember thinking that there should be more than there is, right?
yeah, like we should be doing better. There were a lot of kids. And when I got into college and I was filling out my FAFSA application, and when I was young, 19 years old, the first time I went to college, and I saw how much my parents made, I was shocked. Like it was hardly anything. There wasn't all this time, I'm like, what are they doing with their, there wasn't any. They didn't make a lot of money, but they had a nice house. They were nice middle class people. And I realized, oh, maybe it's just because we've got a nice house and there's so many kids. That's why there's not that much. They just didn't make that much. It was shocking to see their tax returns. And I shouldn't have been 19 the first time I saw them. We should have been talking about that all the way along.
So you're 19, you're just going to college, you see that, and you didn't expect that. What did that mean? What did you decide in that point at that point?
What I mentioned before about how much time am I going to spend away from my kids to work on a photography business or a real estate business or whatever it is, like justifying the time away from the kids had to be worth it from the financial standpoint. Again, if you're running a business, the business needs to be a business, not a hobby,
Well,
not a.
wait. You weren't 19 then. Go back to
Yeah.
19. So where were you filling out this application?
Well, that came from all my mom's cottage businesses growing up that didn't make any money. She was just having fun. She sewed and she knitted and she made dolls and she had all these kind of craft-based businesses. And they never really made a whole lot of money, but they sure took a whole lot of time. And she was having fun with them and they were fulfilling. But I remember resenting those businesses as a mom of a large family, resenting those businesses taking her time away from the kids. I learned a lot of positive things from it, that a mom doesn't disappear into her children when she has children. Like she's still a separate individual who needs to think about her own emotional needs. And I think that was a positive, but I felt like I can do that and make a lot more money to justify. So I can take my kids on great adventures like this Alaska adventure we're on over the next 6 months. We spent the last year and a half traveling, like all of the things that I wanted to do as a kid that we couldn't do because she was busy with cottage businesses that didn't make that much money. I'm like, I can do that, but I can do better. And that was a big formative thing in my life, was feeling like if you're going to take the time away from your family, it better be 10x worth it.
Is that what you thought at 19?
At night, yeah, I don't think I could articulate it in that way. But yeah, at 19, I already was consciously aware that I resented the businesses.
That your mom's businesses that weren't bringing lots of money, but was spending lots of time, she was spending lots of time doing them.
And then somebody said something to me once when I complained about it, probably in my 20s after I had my first kid. And I said, I felt like every conversation with my mom had the whir of the sewing machine in the background. And he said, my mom was the same way. She had a sewing and crafting based business. And that whirring of the sewing machine made me feel like my mom was willing to do whatever it took to bring extra money into the family. And she was teaching me entrepreneurship and she was teaching me frugality. She was teaching me hard work. And he looked at it a very, that sound brought a very different feeling into his life than it did from my own memories. And that's when I realized this is just a perspective thing. And you can choose to look at it how you want to look at it.
Yeah, in those moments though, when you made the decision, you resented her for spending all that time and she doesn't earn any money. I can do better. So I can do better. I mean, turns into I'm gonna do better, turns into I have to do better.
Yeah, because of those layoffs. That took it from a sure, wouldn't it be nice if we could take our kids to travel or some of the things that they want to, they
Yes.
value, into a we have to make this work because my husband's just going to keep getting laid off over and over again. And he was already working full time and doing whatever it took. He had two jobs before. Yeah, so he was doing his part. And I felt like I need to step it up. Or we're not going to have the lifestyle that we want to have. And at one point, again, in those moments where you're falling asleep and we're both almost asleep, and I don't know what he was thinking about, but he just rolls over to me and he says real quietly, he says, if we're ever going to be really wealthy, it's going to be because of you. And this was before real estate. I think I was a photographer at this point, and I just remember being shocked back into to full awakeness and wondering, like, why would he say that? And he's probably right because I'm the one who had the drive and the time to be able to think bigger, where he's the guy who keeps the lights on and he's paying the bills. And I think that sometimes makes the provider think smaller because it's so critical that this the minimum gets done, that the risk of doing more than that is too much. It's kind of like the curse of the middle class, where good is the enemy of great. And I think that was the position that he was in. And so he knew that we needed creativity, big thinking, and more risk taking to be able to really break out of this middle class paycheck to paycheck, and then that he didn't have the mental experience or desire to do that.
So now, when you have debt, or you're not going to get the money in fast enough, or your husband says use a 0% credit card and we'll pay it, and you're freaking out, can you see the connection with what you
Yes.
said?
I like
Or
a
do you get.
lot of financial security, a lot. Like, I have very high standards when it comes to like how much money I want to be either cash flowing or just sitting in the bank, like Scrooge McDuck money bin, swim around it. I remember being a kid being like, why doesn't he spend any of it? There's so much. But he had that high security drive, and so do I.
Yes, and there's no freedom with it.
I have always seen that like having a lot of money
Yes.
is a bureaucratic burden. I don't feel like money is stupid or like, why do we need money? I don't feel any of that. I really understand like the value of trading money as a medium, a barter medium. Great. But the management of a lot of money, the taxes, the attorneys, like the all the creative things that you need to do to balance everything. Like, I end up getting into more into that over the years. It's inevitable, but I always have been a little bit like, that's a lot of work.
But there's also the stress of, I'm going to do better, right? I have to do better. I got to make it work. And then he said, oh, it's because of you if we're going to be rich. That's added more fuel to that conversation.
Yeah, because you want to be wealthy for that level of security that brings you to just, I want to have problems. I want to only have problems that money can solve. So when you're on a trip and you pull into, okay, I'll give you an example. Just like last week, we pull into Skagway, Alaska, 9:30 at night. There are no hotels. And we didn't know that, right? We'd pull into other small towns and there'd be an inn or a motel or hotel or whatever. It didn't matter. They always had rooms. So we pull in and Skagway didn't have any rooms because this is the time of year where all of the laborers are in town getting the town woken back up for the season. And most of the tourists come in, they're staying on their cruise ship. And so there was no hotel. We got 9:30 at night. We got two kids in the truck, me. And I remember just thinking, they're like, we have some friends who are extremely wealthy. Like when you start networking and masterminds, there's just a new group of people. And I remember saying to my husband, like, what would so-and-so do if he pulled in to Skagway during the beginning of the season? There are no hotel rooms, but he's a billionaire. What would he be doing in the situation right now that's different than what we're doing in the situation right now? And thinking in those terms, we're basically like trying to do a shared room at some Airbnb over the thing. And he was like, he would have just helicoptered back to Whitehorse and gotten a hotel there, or he would have just helicoptered straight into, he'd have his car like on the unaccompanied ferry or something. Like, he would not have done it the way that we're doing it. And just thinking about like, how would this much richer person handle the same problem that we're having because of more money? And so just thinking like, how would we handle this problem if money were not an object? And just changing your mindset around to what that feels like and what that looks like, and then working towards having only problems that money can solve, because problems that money cannot solve, like personal problems, emotional problems, all the stuff that you're talking about, like that, we have to just do the work. There's no way we can buy ourselves out of that. Although I probably could buy a better therapist. I could probably buy better retreats. I could probably buy better coaches. So even that money makes a big difference.
If we had more time, which we don't, unfortunately, I could get all the way to the bottom of the stress and have it disappear.
That would be great, because that is definitely something that that takes up more room in my head than it should.
Yeah.
It makes it look like the lifestyle isn't as like carefree and passive income. I never want to give the impression to anybody who's out there listening, who's like, I want to invest with her because I want passive income and I want to travel and I want to do these things and I want to be able to retire early. It's not a bad thing. It's like the best thing that's ever happened to us. Yet to think that it's going to fix all your problems, that's the naivete. To say, I know I will have a new set of problems to deal with, but this new set of problems is so much better. It's like upgrading your problems. And so to make it look like it's carefree and there's nothing mad and it's going to fix all your problems, it's irresponsible. But at the same time, talking about it's so hard that people are going, why would I do that anyway? Well, it's still hard. It's still going to be hard.
I'll leave you with this. Until you fix what's going on inside, whatever you've got on the outside will never fix what's going on inside.
Yes.
People try to get the amount of money, the homes, the not having to work and all that stuff, thinking it'll fix the inside. Whereas if you can fix the inside, that stuff just shows up without the stress, without the constant go. They actually built it. You're in Alaska. It's beautiful. You could be there really just zenning it out.
And most of the time we are. Most of the time we are, because it's about what you choose to focus on. And we choose to focus on finding purple starfish in tide pools and walking along the rocky beaches and seeing 20 bald eagles in a single tree. Like, those kinds of things are amazing experiences that we're getting to have. And that's the majority of what we're focusing on, consciously and unconsciously. And then it is still a mental exercise to not let stress or any of the upgraded problems, however upgraded they may be, to creep in and erode the experience that you're having.
Beautiful. All right. Great. It's been great having you on the show. Emma, how would people reach out to you if they were interested in finding out more about investing and getting money from you for their deals or pouring money into your deals? How would they
To start to get to know me, just listen to my podcast, Passive Income Adventures. We share stories from people who are doing it, from beginners who just got out of college all the way up to billionaires who are like, you know, what still drives me once I've made this much money? So great stories from people just doing the lifestyle. And then if you want to have, if you're serious and you want to have a conversation, investwithemma.com is my calendar, and would love to talk to you about whatever investing issues or personal finance that you want to help goal set. And if we can help you invest as part of a diversified portfolio, we would love to do that. And if not, we'll let you know and probably try and introduce you to somebody who might be a better fit for your goals.
Beautiful. Great. It's been great having you on Free to Lead. Thank you, Emma.
Thank you so much, Will. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Great.
Will Steele here. Thanks so much for listening to the Free to Lead podcast, Journeys of Leaders, Driven by Passion, Inspired by Purpose. If you're a successful leader and you're driven by passion and you're inspired by your purpose and you'd love to be a guest on the show, we'd love to have you. Just visit podcast.willsteele.com. That's podcast.willsteele.com. Will Steele is spelled W-I-L-L-S-T-E-E-L, all one word. If you got something out of today's interview and you'd love to share it on your social media, we'd love you to do that. You can take a screenshot on your phone, you can text it to a friend or post it on your socials. And if you know someone you think they'd be a great guest, tag them on social media or just let them know about the show and include the hashtag Free to Lead. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. And to make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, your ratings, your reviews, and your comments go a long way to help promote the show. And that means a lot to me and my team. If you want to know more, go to our website, willsteele.com, or follow me on LinkedIn under Will Steele, or Facebook under Will Steele, or Instagram under Will Steele Coaching. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.